Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, nothing says day one of the Australian Open like an Arctic blizzard. That is what David Law woke up to at 4:30 a.m. this morning. What on earth were you thinking, David, when you walked to work for day one of the Aussie Open, the Happy Slam in an Arctic blizzard? And how does it compare to how you're feeling now after day one?
Well, I feel great now. I feel a bit weird, you know, because it's 2-3 in the afternoon and I really do feel quite ready for bed. And it's beautifully sunny outside now. But the day has been great, so I've really enjoyed it. But you're right. When I walked out the hotel door at 5:30 a.m. and it was pitch dark and a blizzard, It did amuse me, just the ridiculousness of the difference between where I am and where they are actually playing the tennis that I am describing.
Don't know why you're getting up at 4:30 if you're not commencing your commute until 5:30. You need to get that routine down to 10 minutes.
I know from experience that you have become an expert at that, but you wouldn't get to watch the hours worth of tennis and catch up on all the tennis podcast Twitter that I got to catch up on. See?
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Matt, were you awake at 4:30? You have had a very weird body clock situation. Start as you mean to go on. How are you feeling? How was your night and morning?
Yeah, I mean, this is a little bit of a throwback for me, really, because up until 2 years ago, this was how I used to follow the Australian Open, being up through the night. And yes, I intended to watch just a couple of hours from midnight, ended up watching about 6 hours from midnight. So my body clock is a little bit all over the place. But as weird an experience it was on the first day, it was also a classic Grand Slam day, wasn't it? There was so much going on, so many good stories, and a classic Australian Open situation with it ending at, I think, 1 o'clock in the morning, Melbourne time. So for all those reasons, it was kind of familiar and perfect. Yeah, it was a really, really exhilarating day of tennis, I thought.
Yeah, I had a really strange sense of nostalgic familiarity as well. My FOMO was somewhat eased by the fact that I was having flashbacks of kind of being 17, 18 in sixth form and being late to school because I was at home watching the Australian Open and knowing that I was going to be late for Mr. Barr's English class and knowing I'd be able to talk my way out of it because Mr. Barr was, well, a bit of a mess.
and you can talk your way out of things.
I think he was sort of one of the only teachers that was quite supportive of me sacrificing schooling for sport. I had a weird sort of nostalgic feeling about that. I don't know whether that will last the fortnight, but it was a nice antidote to the FOMO that I was kind of expecting to be overwhelmed by today. A bit of housekeeping before we get into it all. Crumble is back. She had such a great time as our Australian Open mascot last year that she is back for the two-peat.
Go on, Crumble.
It's not a word crumble. You have to come back next year in order that we can say three-peat, because two-peat does not a work. but we're very pleased to have you back. Crumble produces excellent content. So we'll be settling in and expecting some of that. She has her own channel,
doesn't she?
She has her own channel. I think
so
let's get ready for Crumble, which is, you know, excellent. Other bits of housekeeping. We have a whole team, a whole little army of tennis podcasters working on the tournament this fortnight. It's not just myself and Matt and David. David's obviously also working for BBC Radio 5 Live this fortnight. We've also got a couple of people helping us with our Twitter feed. We have American Andrew. Hello, Andrew. And we have Not American Hannah. Hello, Hannah. Hannah Wilkes of Being Excellent on Twitter fame is helping us out over the next fortnight with Twitter coverage of the night sessions. Andrew, Being American, is doing the overnights or the day sessions, Australia time. So welcome to the team. Patrick's going to be editing for us for this fortnight. And it is because of the Kickstarter that we're able to deploy a little army, and we're very pleased to be able to do so, and we think it'll enhance our offering, as might say.
And I mean, it already is. If you haven't been following Tennis Podcast Twitter today, then go and sit down and just scroll through it, because Andrew is great, Hannah is great, they are funny, well-informed, smart people, and they do Twitter a lot better than I do. So I've very much been enjoying just sitting back and watching them get on with it. So, yeah, can highly recommend.
Yes, our deployment of Hannah and Andrew is in absolutely no way anything to do with Matt's abilities on Twitter. Matt is excellent on Twitter, but we need to free up his time to do other things, like the newsletter. If you're not subscribed to the newsletter, what are you playing at? Even my mum is subscribed now after complaining that my dad was getting it and she wasn't. They're daily during the slams. They feature predictions and they feature a daily Matt stat, as well as all sorts of other stuff. And honestly, we work very hard to make sure that they really add value to what we do. So yeah, get yourself on board. The link will be in the show notes. Now, day one of the Australian Open 2021. I had all the intention in the world of doing this chronologically, starting with Naomi Osaka, the first winner. The first winner of the day at the Aussie Open, the last woman to win a Grand Slam, obviously the US Open. And then Denis Shapovalov and Jannik Sinner happened and kind of turned all of my podcasting presenting plans on their head. So we're actually going to go kind of reverse chronologically and see where that takes us. Because, David, I feel like we should capitalise on the buzz that you're currently experiencing, having just finished commentating on Denis Shapovalov against Jannik Sinner. Now, it's not just a buzz because it was a truly splendid match and the best possible way to kick off the tournament, but also because you got a prediction right.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Shapovalov won 3-6, 6-3, 6-2, 4-6, 6-4. Take it away.
That.
Bask in all of it, David.
Yeah,
off
well,
you go.
There you go. Yeah. First of all, how nice to see the match that we all gawped at when the draw was being made become what we hoped it would, which is a classic, a real... I mean, okay, they didn't always play well at the same time, but the ebbs and flows of it were a joy. They were the five-set format at its best. And yeah, I mean, from a personal perspective, the match did play out as I kind of thought it would in terms of why I went for the prediction that I did, in that he outlasted him. Jannik Sinner was just out on his feet at the end. I felt really sorry for him. And yet I was hugely impressed with how, despite the fact that he was clearly out on his feet, he didn't give up. He kept on fighting and he was not far away from turning it around, even in that latter stage of the fifth set, even when Shapovalov was serving for it, he had his chances. The interesting thing is that for the first set, when it was just about tennis, Sinner was comfortably the better. Now, I know that maybe Shapovalov might say, I didn't play as well as I could in that set, probably didn't. But Sinner was pretty unplayable because he has really no weakness that I can see. He... certainly from the baseline anyway, he moves like a cat. He's always perfectly balanced. Anki Othavong in our commentary box made the point that because he's a skier from a skiing resort, he seems to have the balance of a skier when he's pulled out wide and when he's having to lunge, and he's always in position. And he seems to have brutal power on both sides of his ground stroke game. And that's from a guy who is still very boyish. He's 19 and he looks young. You know, he's physically going to fill out more, I think.
He looks young facially and physically, but the way he holds himself and his demeanour is very precocious, I think, actually. Yeah. He reminds me, and I'm not just saying this because they're both ginger, he reminds me of the lead character in The Queen's Gambit.
I haven't seen it, but I'll take your word for it.
But Matt is nodding.
Yes, I've seen The Queen's Gambit, yes.
Do you know what I mean? That kind of icy cold,
yes,
precociousness.
Yes, and that look in their eye that they know something that you don't.
Yeah, steely.
That's a great line. Yeah. That's exactly what Sinner comes across like. He it is as though he's had, although he's 19, he's had another life and he knows all about this. But what I loved about it was the way Shapovalov didn't panic and didn't go away and really showed the extremes of his game, not just in shot making, not just in sort of trying to hit blinding winners that end up on tennis TV GIFs, but using his left-handedness to drag his opponent around side to side, off the serve, get him out of court, then open up the space, and also come to the net. This was much more like the Denis Shapovalov that used to come to the net as a junior a lot. Maybe it's no coincidence that his mother was the coach courtside on her own, who always used to teach him to play that way. And I feel like in recent years, recent 18 months or whatever, he's gone away from going to the net as much, because I think, frankly, he wasn't a good enough volleyer. In this match, I think that aside from fatigue, the net game of Shapovalov was the difference between the two, because his tactic was to use the net game, and he came in twice as many times as Sinner. Sinner still looks like he goes to the net just to try to finish off a point that he's already won, pretty much.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by Shapovalov's willingness to make it that kind of match and his use of strategy, because my disappointment with Shapovalov over the past few years, where I've sort of felt like he hasn't developed in the way that I've wanted him to, after all that excitement that I and so many other people felt about him a few years ago, is because I sometimes feel like there's no strategy out there. It's just the strategy is make the highlights reel. The strategy is just shot making. There is very little sort of point construction or plan, seemingly. And I didn't think he would be prepared to compromise himself in the way that was required to get the upper hand in that match, which was to make it physical, to make it a grind, because that is so not his MO. And, you know, as much as I'm fantastically excited about Sinner, and as Hannah said on our Twitter feed, certified next big thing, Jannik Sinner. Yeah, all those other next big things that we've been saying are the next big thing, they are not certified. Jannik Sinner is certified next big thing. Yeah, and hey, I had abandoned Shapovalov and certified Jannik Sinner as my next big thing, but he did something today that I had doubted whether he would do, and I'm pleased to have seen that.
Yeah, I was similarly impressed with both players for all sorts of reasons. Just as you said, David, the way Sinner navigated the ebbs and flows of that five-set match with his energy levels, it's something we've seen Novak Djokovic do so many times. He kept getting these second, third, fourth wins, as Hannah said on Twitter. And I've always felt like it takes great experience to know how to do that. But Sinner is such a wise head. And I think those instincts have probably been sharpened. He's, over the last few weeks, he's given probably too much credit to Nadal. But he spent 2 weeks practicing with Nadal, picking the brains of Nadal. And the way he hung about in that fifth set and never gave up were the sort of qualities that we're used to seeing from Nadal. And, you know, I think Sinner's got that inbuilt in him anyway. But that's probably something that he has learned and improved on over this last month. Shapovalov impressed me because I think mentally that's quite a difficult match for Shapovalov against someone younger than him. You know, it's that whole new kid in town song. It's the Eagles. Everyone loves you, so don't let them down. You're great until someone new comes along. That was kind
These
of...
These are not lyrics from Drip or Night Train.
But I just think that must be tough for Shapovalov. He doesn't play people younger than him. He wasn't even the crowd favourite, I didn't think, on that court. He was coming up with some fantastic shots, which the crowd love, and he can inspire a crowd. But it felt like most of them were pulling for Sinner in there, and he handled all that mentally so well, and he understood the ebbs and flows of that match. He was being outplayed at the start, and yet he hung in there in that second set, and he lost that fourth set, and he knuckled down and didn't lose himself in that fifth set. And then, as you said, the tactical awareness to really swing that serve out wide and follow it into the net, because Sinner had started moving way back behind the baseline, hadn't he? And that had worked for him in the fourth set on return, and then Shapovalov figured out a strategy to counter that. There was some really interesting tactical nous, I thought, in the match as well. And of course, the way they hit their ground strokes is thrilling to watch. And yeah, I really hope we get to see more matches between them, because they match up really, really well against each other.
And more matches with that kind of atmos at this Australian Open, because honestly, overnight, I was concerned about the crowds and the atmosphere, very concerned. It was disappointing. We were all interested to see how different it would be from last week and the Melbourne Summer Series warm-up events. We'd kind of been reassured. Those hadn't had much publicity. The AO has. That will have, you know, crowds as full as they're allowed to be. Well, they definitely weren't overnight for the overnight UK time for the day session. On Rod Laver Arena, though, for that Shapovalov Sinner match, okay, not full, not allowed to be full, but it felt like the atmosphere it deserved, crucially. And I felt very emotional about it, actually. I felt exhilarated and actually really soothed by hearing that crowd. I despite the excitement of it, I sort of dozed off for a bit in that third set, because I just felt so comforted by the sights and sounds of that crowd. It was like a sort of lullaby.
Reminder that you don't need that many people to make an atmosphere. And reminded me of Roland Garros and Fiona Ferro, for instance, and those sort of matches. So, yeah, I felt the same. It was exhilarating. Great to commentate with as well, because you could finish what were so many rallies on blinding winners and reach what you do in radio commentary, which is the crescendo, and have the exclamation mark of the crowd to come in behind you, which is what you want. And it was a really uplifting match, and what a way to start the tournament.
He now faces Bernard Tomic in that match, and I have a feeling that Shapovalov will be the crowd favourite there, because in the on-court interview after the match, Shapovalov was very innocently asked about that, his next matchup against the Aussie Tomic, and the mere mention of him elicited boos from the crowd. And then Shapovalov very innocently delivered a line about Tomic. What did he say?
He said, Bernard is no joke.
He said, Bernard is no joke. And of course, he was talking about the tennis. And then everyone laughed. That could be a bit awkward.
I mean, the thing is, look, I know Bernard has had a checkered history of his own anyway, but those images of his girlfriend talking about never washing her own hair and what a disaster it was that she was going to have to in quarantine, I reckon they would have massively wound up the people that live here. I found it funny because it's so stupid, but if you are compromising your entire life in order to not have to be in lockdown and to have kept the virus at bay, and you hear in that, people don't want to hear it.
Mm.
I think, around here. So I'm not surprised.
We'll stay with the men's side of things, given that is where we started. While Shapovalov and Sinner were thrashing it out, or certainly during the early stages of that, Novak Djokovic was winning his 31st, 32nd and 33rd sets in a row against Jeremy Shardy. Motion to never have those two drawn to face one another again. I mean, Djokovic would definitely veto that motion, but I think the rest of the tennis world, I mean, it's just put the name on the draw sheet straight away. I mean, how on earth do you walk onto court against somebody that you've lost 33 sets in a row against?
I'll be honest, I didn't see a ball of that match because while that was going on, I was trying to find a stat to find out whether anyone had ever won more sets in a row against a single opponent.
Of course you were.
And it, to be honest, it took me the length of the match to find one. And then I came across Steffi Graf versus Natalie Tauziat, won 42 sets in a row. They played 21 matches and she won them all in straight sets.
Oh my God. And Tauziat is a Grand Slam finalist.
Yeah. And there wasn't even a tiebreak in any of those sets. So pure Steffi Graf dominance there. So I can't comment on Djokovic, but I stand by your thoughts that we don't really need to see Djokovic versus Shardy ever again.
Is that Matt's stat? Because if it is not, I mean, what
else
you got?
What's Matt's stat going to be?
I've got another one for the newsletter. I wasted that one. I put it on Twitter and then I had to find another one for the newsletter.
Never a waste, Matt, never a waste. I didn't see loads of it, but Djokovic looked very, very good. Very good indeed. He now plays Francis Tiafoe, which could be interesting. Tiafoe had his breakthrough at the Australian Open, didn't he? First quarterfinal of a slam. Riley Opelka, David, just let you know, won today. Also lurking, looking dangerous in that part of the draw.
Is he still
I don't know
beard?
If he's looking dangerous. He's definitely looking tall.
Right, good. He's also added the beard as well, which I think really adds to the look.
I'll do a daily Opelka watch for you.
Cool. Thanks.
Or a bi-daily
every
Opelka
other daily.
Watch.
Yeah.
Lurking in Djokovic's half of the draw, I don't think that really works, does it, is Nick Kyrgios. He won in straight sets today over a man with the initials FFS. We've learned his first name. Federico Ferreira Silva. Have I got that right?
You have.
Great. Yeah. Nick Kyrgios, it wasn't without its moments. I thought he got quite tight in that third set as he was approaching the finish line, and he was doing his doing the stuff that he does in order to try and loosen himself up. But in the second set, he lost just 2 points on serve in the whole set. Well, you know, when he was purring and he was loose, he was fantastic.
The undulations in his mood, disposition, tennis, attitude, behaviour were just extraordinary, to be quite honest. I mean, they shouldn't be, because how many times have we watched the guy? But I still came along and sat down, and I've told you the other day that I just could do without Nick Kyrgios, the circus. I don't know whether I'm going to get engaged in this. He immediately gets broken for two love by Ferreira Silva, who's never played a Grand Slam match in his life before, 25 years of age from Portugal, and he's suddenly out there playing like Rod Laver, you know, just sort of swiping these winners left, right and centre. And Kyrgios is kind of trying to absorb these shots and just feel him out and see what he's got, and then realises he's two love down. Third game of the match lasted 20 minutes. There were 10 deuces. Kyrgios had 8 break points and finally broke. But the aggro that he was causing in that third game, I mean, he told somebody's girlfriend in his support team to leave in the middle of the third game.
The theory is that it wasn't his own girlfriend.
No, it wasn't his own girlfriend. It was to tell your girlfriend to leave to somebody in his box. He was just getting really wound up. He was swearing. And you're thinking, oh, no, it looks like the wheels are coming off here. And it's only three games in. We've had a half an hour. And then suddenly it's like a storm that just blows out and it's gone. And everything's calm. He's fine. He's suddenly charming. He's nice to ball kids. He's nice to the man who brings him a bottle of water. He's applauding his opponent's shots. He asks his opponent in that third set whether he can have his towel because he hasn't used it. Yes, of course you can have him a towel. It's just you don't know where you are in these Kyrgios matches. But, well, I guess I've just forgotten what it's like because nothing's changed, really.
Mats Wilander said if he can keep his matches to three sets, he's a threat. Big
he's
if,
got
isn't it?
Ugo Humbert next.
He's got Ugo Humbert next, and I'd be very surprised if that is a straight sets match Humbert can play. He said it felt normal, to be honest. He was asked kind of about the depleted crowd out in the John Cain Arena. He said the crowd here was going nuts, and they were. It was a thin crowd, frankly. That definitely wasn't capacity, even the reduced capacity that they're allowed, nowhere near it. But they were putting a shift in the crowd that were there. He rated his own performance as pretty average. This was all in the on-court interview, just before which he, or actually just after which, I think, he was asked to do the writing on the camera thing. And he thought about it long and hard. That is a drill in the background. That
I was going to ask.
This doesn't happen when we're on site, does it?
Either that or you're hungry.
That is my neighbours having some work done. We thought he'd written "Miss You, Muzza" on the camera, which he might well have done. Or it might have been "Miss You, Chorizo." Relatable. All of that's relatable. Or some hypothesise that it was "Miss You, Chizza," which is a reference to his girlfriend Chiara, or Chiara, who I believe is at home in Canberra. There's been some stuff about them in the tabloids the past few days. Apparently they've deleted all pictures of one another on Instagram, and she posted something cryptic about people cheating. So it could have been something to do with that. I don't know. But he wrote something which we're all very interested in on the camera. And then, after the match, in the press conference, he was asked about, I think, what we can now call a saga with Novak Djokovic. Can we call it a saga? Have we got any other names for it?
Basically, it's like the playground when you say, so-and-so's been talking about you. What do you think?
Yeah.
And they go, well, I think he's an absolute... That's
toe rag,
isn't it?
Yeah. Here is that "I think he's an absolute toe rag" quote from Nick Kyrgios, who was asked about what Novak Djokovic had to say about him. Of course, Novak Djokovic was responding to Nick Kyrgios calling him a tool. We could go further back, but I'll leave it there. This is what Nick Kyrgios had to say today. He said, it's a strange one for me because I read his comments. He said he doesn't respect me off the court. I'm like, it actually would make complete sense to me if he was like, look, I don't respect the guy on the court because I understand if he doesn't agree with some of my antics on the court that I've done in the past. And when we've played matches, I think I've actually been pretty good towards him. But I'm not quite sure how he can't respect me off the court. I feel like I've gone about things extremely well, especially during the pandemic. I was driving around delivering food to people during the pandemic that didn't or couldn't get the supplies. I was extremely careful about what I was doing. I didn't want to spread the virus to anyone. Now I'm actually trying to donate meal kits to people that need food, and I have my foundation. So it's very strange to me as to why he would say he doesn't respect me off the court. I actually do a lot off the court. But yeah, he's a very strange cat, Novak is. Heck of a tennis player, but unfortunately, someone that's partying with his shirt off during a global pandemic, I don't know if I can take any slack from that man. That's as bad as it gets for me. I mean, look, everyone's got their red lines. And that's Kyrgios's, and the gloves are off. And if there is a tennis god, he will make it to the semi-finals. I mean, he won't, but...
Well, I think Dominic Thiem might have something to say about that in round three.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's not going to happen. We're not even going to attempt to get excited about it, but... Oh, wouldn't it be?
And then those quotes were put to Djokovic in his press conference.
Oh, and how did that go?
He had absolutely no intention of getting involved with it whatsoever. He just said no.
Oh, well, that is disappointing. But maybe the bear will be prodded further in future press conferences. A few other results for you from the men's side. Results, news, points of note. Alexander Zverev won today. He beat Marcos Giron in four sets. I didn't see any of the match. It was very much in the depths of the night. There was a spectacular racket smash, which I have seen, which I think was subsequent to him losing the set that he lost before going on to win. I don't think any of us saw any of that match, did we, to comment on the tennis?
I saw a few bits and I heard a little bit of the commentary. Roger Rashid was on commentary, and the sense seemed to be that Zverev was really struggling to find his game and was really lacking confidence. I mean, and I'm sure his opponent was playing well, but my sense was that he was just trying to hang around long enough because he could have gone two sets to love down. And then the scoreline got easier. So I think probably he did find his way.
He was wearing an item of clothing provided for him, presumably by his kit sponsor, which has a nickname, pretty well-known nickname in certain parts of the world, certainly in the UK, I think in the US as well. I'm not going to say the nickname because it's pretty horrible, really, but it is well-known and still used in some circles. And given that nickname, it feels like a pretty stupid decision to be wearing that item of clothing. Also, he looked pretty silly in it, I thought.
It was a sleeveless shirt, wasn't it? It's a vest, basically. Yeah. It's a Nadal-type vest. And, I mean,
not Nadal-type biceps.
No. Well, physically, I mean, I'm trying to think of other... remember when early Del Potro wore one of those and he didn't really have the arms for it then, but he obviously filled out eventually. And I remember once Grigor Dimitrov tried to wear one and he looked ridiculous. There are not many that can pull it off, to be honest, and Zverev absolutely doesn't have the physique for it. And as you say, I mean, a lot of people, the moment they saw him, thought what... well... of that nickname, and given all the context of his last 6 or 8 months and the allegations made against him, it just seemed unwise at the very least.
Mm. And aside from that, you know, this is somebody that, I mean, he's had his fingers burned with statement outfits before. The baseball kit with knee-high socks lives long in my mind. Mm. That US Open when he lost in the second round, I think. I don't know, just wear a t-shirt and shorts, mate.
Yeah. Stay low key. Win tennis matches.
Couple of other quick bits from the men's side. Correction from yesterday. It was a Pedro, not a João Sousa, that Stan Wawrinka was playing. So apologies to João Sousa for being mistaken for somebody that lost today in straight sets to Stan Wawrinka.
There's two tennis playing João Sousas as yes. well, isn't there?
Yeah.
Which doesn't help.
Is there?
Different yes. spelling, though.
One Sousa. Is Brazilian.
One with an S and one with a Z.
Yeah, one's correct. Brazilian, one's Portuguese. This was neither of them. This was Pedro, and he's out of the tournament for Wawrinka. I'm really trying. Wawrinka won in straight sets. And a final note from the men's draw, a really heart-wrenching one, actually. Germán Fis lost overnight to Rui Savori, the Finnish player, who's sort of slowly making inroads into the game. Five-set match, really close, came to press afterwards. He hasn't won a match since COVID hit, since tennis's hiatus. I remember I commentated on his loss in the first round of the French Open. And look, you can understand why Germán Fis without crowds, just it doesn't work. I mean, there were some crowds, I think, for his match today, but very few. It was on one of the smaller courts, and outside court attendance is not good because ticket holders can't mingle in the same way that they usually would be able to. They're restricted to designated areas. And he comes into press afterwards and he's asked, this is in French, about, you know, how he's keeping his head up, how he's trying to stay positive in spite of these results and everything that's going on. You know, this is the guy that's just spent 2 weeks in quarantine in order to lose in a first round. Now he's going to have to head home. That's really rough. And his opportunities to have runs at slams are, you know, they're limited. They're limited. I hope he'll be around for a number of years more, but their days are numbered for sure. And he said it's my mum. And then he really choked up, sort of hid his face from the camera, really choked up, and said, she just tells me to keep on going, to stay positive and keep on going. But he's sort of saying it through tears. And it's something, it's not that you don't see emotion from Monfils, but you don't necessarily always see that kind of emotion. You don't see that sort of revelation of how much he cares and how much losses might get to him. And he says it in that beautiful, crisp French with his lovely, softly spoken voice. And I just, I welled up with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I went watching that and I really wish him well.
I feel like I wasn't really aware that he'd had so many struggles, to be honest. But then my mind goes back to at the end of last year when he made some announcement, and going to be live at such and such a time. And we all thought, oh, is he going to announce his retirement? And then he very quickly said, no, it's not that. I just want to tell you what my plans are. But I agree with you, because he is such a shot maker and a flashy kind of showboater, but in a really, I don't mean that in a critical way, just such a happy way on court. He brings happiness to the court. He makes everybody feel good. You almost feel like he's not that bothered. You know, it's like he wants to win, but if it doesn't happen, that's all right. Well, I think that this showed that there's more to him than that. And quite a revelation really to me.
Yeah, wish him well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Going back then to where I intended to start the podcast, which was all of, what is it now, 15 hours ago that the tournament started, Rod Laver Arena, Naomi Osaka, the former champion, first to step out onto it in seemingly what looked like a very tricky first-round match against the former quarterfinalist Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova. 6-1, 6-2 for Osaka, the first winner of the tournament. She said after the match on the court that it has been a bit of a struggle to recover from quarantine. She said everyone's bodies are a bit shocked. She didn't look it. She looked brilliant, I thought.
Yeah, the first winner of the tournament and the favourite to be the last winner of the tournament.
Despite the draw.
Yeah, and playing like that, you realise why she says she likes a tough draw. Because, as you said, that is a dangerous opponent in the first round. Pavlyuchenkova, three-time quarterfinalist in Australia, three of the last 4 years. She loves those conditions, always plays well there, always starts the season well. And she didn't have a chance to get going today. By the time she got going, she was a set and a breakdown because Osaka was blisteringly good, you know, firing winners into the corners, moving into her shots with such power and purpose and just so controlled and measured and just a real statement performance, which was kind of the theme of the first few hours of today's play. It was the leading contenders, many of them playing quite early in the women's draw, and basically all of them looking excellent.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Serena was second out onto the Rod Laver Arena. She beat Laura Siegmund 6-1, 6-1 in 56 minutes. She lost serve in her opening game and then won 12 of the next 13. She was also very, very good.
Yes, I saw that. And it was strange because she came onto court just as Venus was finishing on another court, and
which will never get old.
No, just perfect imagery of one Williams sister winning and the other one starting. I had the two screens lined up, and it was a lovely moment. And Serena came out, and she had a tracksuit on, and then she unveiled her kit, which was a one-legged cat suit in all sorts of colours, pink and black. You know, it's really vibrant, really striking. And it was the sort of kit unveiling that would have probably drawn all sorts of gasps and oohs and reaction from a crowd. And yet, because there weren't that many people in the stadium, it felt a little bit flat in the stadium. I mean, obviously social media was on fire with this kit, but it then prompted this slow start from Serena. I mean, it was none of it quite matched up. This really statement kit, and then a really flat opening game. And I did think, oh my goodness, is this going to be one of those performances? Because Siegmund is tricky. She can be a tricky customer. She's not afraid to get in your face a little bit. And I thought we could be in for a little bit of an interesting match here. And then I couldn't have been more wrong, because suddenly Serena clicked into gear and was impeccable. The thing which is standing out for me with Serena these last few matches is her movement. She is getting to the ball faster than I have seen her get to the ball in quite a long time. And that just allows her to hit the shots she wants to hit. She was brilliant. Absolutely devastatingly good.
She described her own performance as vintage Serena.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really quite a statement because she sounds confident. She sounds like she's playing confidently, and she sounds confident in her own self as well. I mean, she needs to be in that half of the draw.
I mean, vintage Serena is 23 Grand Slams.
That's exciting. And I didn't see it, but I mean, the scoreline itself, I agree with you. When I saw Laura Siegmund, I thought, oh, you know, that could be tricky. And she's made it anything but.
And we've theorized, I think, in the past about Australia perhaps providing the conditions for Serena to feel a little bit less stressed at a Grand Slam. She doesn't have all the history that she has at the US Open, and she seems incredibly relaxed to me over this last week or so. And I think that's a good sign for her.
I don't know how many of the predictions entrants that we have this year, Matt. I don't know how many of their predictions you've glanced over, but are you able to tell me roughly what proportion, if any, have gone for Serena as the winner?
Let's revisit that question tomorrow when I have properly glanced over the predictions. But
I know that none of us have, and Pam Shriver hasn't.
Yeah, and what I do know is we also do some year-long predictions. And one of the questions in that was, do you agree or disagree with the statement that Serena will not win a Grand Slam title this year? And the last time I saw that figure, it was about 80% saying they agreed. They didn't think she would win a slam this year. That's out of roughly 50 or 60 people.
I said she would win one. I'm fairly sure that's contradicting something I've said previously.
He's hedging. Always flipping hedging, David.
It's just on the moment.
I see you.
Are we allowed to reveal what predictions we've gone for this tournament?
I think we'll sort of drip feed them rather than do a... Well, I may or may not have just brazenly copied Pam Shriver.
Subconsciously.
Yeah. Totally not intentional. She now plays somebody called Nina Stojanovic, does Serena Williams. Don't know a whole lot about Stojanovic, but good luck if it's vintage Serena. Good luck, Nina.
I've got Serena in my semis, being beaten by Osaka.
Yes, so do I.
Same, yes.
And I think so does Pam.
My predictions are worryingly similar to David's.
Oh. Hey! I feel quite relieved.
I don't.
Venus Williams, incidentally, beat Kirsten Flipkins. She was good. It was Venus. I saw quite a bit of that. She plays Sara Errani next. That's vintage, isn't it? Venus Williams against Sara Errani.
Errani beat Pat Cash's new Chong Wong. Yeah, catching.
It was a really tight match, actually.
That sounds the wrong way around, doesn't it? Because, I mean, she's a cracking player who beat Serena Williams last year. She's coached by Pat Cash, is what I meant to say, is what I should be saying. But Wong Chung, I mean, and actually we had Pat briefly on the radio with us, and he was just gutted for her because she'd got the lead. And it looked like she was going to win and didn't quite get over the line. There's so many of those, aren't there? I mean, I always think that about qualifying tournaments. If you just walked around, you've got all these little storylines and these lives being affected by what goes on in an hour and a half or 2 hours. Oh, what a sport.
the biggest seed to go out on day one was Angelique Kerber, the former champion, of course. She lost 6-love, 6-4 to Bernarda Pera. It's the first time since 2015 that Kerber hasn't reached the second week of the Australian Open. Now, Angelique Kerber was one of those that experienced the hard quarantine. She was on one of those affected flights. She did play in the hard quarantine cup and she did all right in it. Quarterfinals, I think.
I think she beat Jabeur.
We were saying, oh, you know, she's flying under the radar and that's where she likes to be. She was asked in press afterwards, do you think the hard lockdown and lack of preparation impacted your play at all? She said, definitely yes. I mean, of course, I was really trying to stay positive and doing the best things out of the 2 week situation. But of course, you feel it, especially if you play a real match where it counts and you play the first match in a Grand Slam against an opponent who doesn't stay in the hard lockdown. I was feeling this at the beginning. That, of course, my balls were always a little bit out and I was not feeling the rhythm that I was before the 2 weeks, to be honest. That's for sure. I mean, what can I do? I tried to get the best out of it. Of course, you feel it if you're not hitting balls 2 weeks and you're not in the rhythm. Ben Rothenberg pointed out on Twitter that, like Kerber, the 24th seed Alison Risk was also one that had to do the 14-day hard quarantine. And she fell in the first round today, 6-2, 6-1, to the world number 101, Anastasia Potapova.
Sorry, just a quick word on Kerber, because I watched that, because, I mean, the scoreline was just so dramatic. I was just drawn to that match. I wanted to see what was going on. And there was a point where Pera had won 8 games and Kerber had won 8 points. That was how large the discrepancy was between them. And
wow,
Kerber taking some heavy losses in slams is not totally new. If you think back quite recently, she's had some heavy defeats. She lost to Collins at the Australian Open a couple of years ago. Jennifer Brady really took her apart at the US Open last year. And I think Potapova actually did similar at the French Open. But this was something else. She was so flat in those first 45 minutes, probably, and then eventually did manage to put up some resistance and looked like she might fight back. She had 3 break points in the final game of the match to get that second set level. But, I mean, ultimately, Pera, credit to her, she was firing winners all over the court. She's got such a flat hit, a big lefty forehand, and she sort of took advantage, I think, of Kerber being not quite ready for this tournament.
So you might be thinking, those hard quarantiners, they don't stand a chance. But tell that to Bianca Andreescu, because she is back. She beat Mihaela Buzanescu 6-2, 4-6, 6-3 on the John Cain Arena. I tuned into this in the middle of the night with Andreescu having won the first set. It all looked to be going a dream. I was just thinking, oh my goodness, what a joy to be watching Andreescu just playing tennis. It really made my heart sing. And then it turned out even more pleasing than that was watching Bianca Andreescu with her back against the wall, having to fight her way out of a really tricky spot. She lost the second set and it was seriously dicey, Matt. I think you also watched this. It was seriously dicey there for her at the start of the third, wasn't it? She really had to draw upon, and she talked about this in the press conference afterwards, how she was actively thinking back to all those situations in tournaments that she's won where she had her back against the wall and she somehow found a way out of it. She was actively drawing on that memory bank.
Yeah, and one of the things she said in her pre-tournament press conference was how when she was in quarantine last year, she found herself watching videos of herself, you know, from 2019.
Which is what Pam Shriver advised people to do with their quarantine time, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't think I've released so many endorphins as I did during that Andreescu match in a long time. I was just smiling the whole time.
Yeah, I was giddy.
I was overwhelmed with joy. I mean, just to see her walking on the court, as Andrew pointed out, not with any tape on her whatsoever. The first time I've seen her without any tape, probably ever. And she was wearing purple, which was what she was wearing when she won the US Open. It just brought back
Matt, it just brought back
everything. And I was so happy. And the whole match was a journey of rediscovery about what makes Andreescu so good and so thrilling to watch as a tennis player. Because, as you said, at the start of the set, she was pulling out all the shots. She had it all going on. She was hitting the big forehand. She was using her slice. And then Buzanescu started to get into the match and really made it competitive. And then suddenly you saw the competitive instincts of Andreescu kick in. And I suddenly was thinking back to all the three-set matches she won in 2019. I think she won 13 three-setters in a row that season. And there was a point in that third set where she was 3-all, love 40 down. And I don't know what it is she's drawing on in that moment. It's experience from having been there, but it feels like a real inner belief that she has in her game. And she knows she can get herself out of holes. She trusts herself. She won those points. She let out a huge let's go and then won the match quite easily from there. And yeah, I just so enjoyed that whole match and that feeling of vintage Andreescu, which feels like a ridiculous thing to say considering she's still so young and has barely played that many matches. But she does have a trademark victory, and this was kind of it.
Those are the two things that I have to admit I had forgotten about with Bianca Andreescu. I'd forgotten that she wins matches that are incredibly tight. I think I'd got the way she looks and her shot making and variety in my mind as to that is Bianca Andreescu. I'd forgotten the three set ability, and I'd forgotten the on court expressiveness of suddenly out of nowhere. Not in quite the way that Danielle Collins does, but in her own way, not caring a jot about who's watching or what people might think, just it coming out and her shouting, let's go, in that way. And it made me smile as well, I agree. We were really... It was the moment, I think, that I saw this sharing of generations of all these players, because we've had these ins and outs over the last 2 or 3 years where somebody's been back and Serena's not been there and somebody's come through and then they've got injured and then suddenly Azarenka's managed to make a comeback last year, but Bianca Andreescu doesn't really exist as a tennis player at that time. And then Iga Swiatek wins the French Open, and now here they all are. At the same time, Ash Barty had been out for a year because of the pandemic. You know, I'm so happy. I don't wish any ill on Mihaela Buzanescu because she's a really good player and she put up a good fight today. But I was so happy that Andreescu won because the tournament is enriched by her presence. And with all of these players together, just for however long it lasts in this tournament, it's a real thrill.
Yeah, it's like Avengers Assemble, isn't it?
I was just thinking that.
I mean, I haven't actually seen that film, but the title gives me the gist. She said, Andreescu, in her press conference afterwards, which was also just a joy. You know, she was just exuding something that was completely infectious. She said last night I was super, super nervous to come back. She never says super once, always super, super. She said, last night I was super, super nervous to come back and overwhelmed about everything. She said, I did cry, actually. I'm not afraid to say that. It was a release for me of all the stuff from the last 15 months. I'm super, super relieved to win. There were some ups and downs in the match attitude-wise. What can I say? She said, those kind of matches are super good for me. Oh, just one super. Super good for me because it shows me I can scramble when I need to, when my back is against the wall. So, yeah, part of me wants to see her just sort of safely progress through the tournament as far as she possibly can. And part of me wants to see that Andreescu back against the wall grit as much as possible.
I kind of feel like, let's be realistic, she's not going to go very far. You know, if she wins a match or two, that's probably as much as we can expect. And then I remember this is a player who's only played about four tournaments in her whole life and she's just won them all. You know, I think I've only ever seen her lose one match that I can remember that she's finished. So, and without her wearing any tape and with this innate ability to just play the sport, it's not about playing her way in or anything like that or experience. She's just an incredible tennis player, both in terms of talent, court craft, understanding. She's just got it. And so, don't want to put limits on it. And what's the match? There's a match coming up in a round or two.
Shay.
That's the Shay next. And then isn't there a blockbuster on the horizon if she were to get through that one?
I think she would play Osaka in the quarters if she can get there.
That's not the horizon.
No, maybe not.
I'm thinking of Venus Williams. If she can get through the next one, it would be Venus Williams in the next round in the third round for Bianca Andreescu. And yes, quite a result actually. By the way, that Shea has beaten Peronkova.
And just on these expectations of Andreescu, I think we've all wrestled with our expectations of her. And something I found interesting in her press conference as well is she's having those own thoughts about herself. It really strikes me that she has high expectations because she knows she's good. Check me out. But she's also tempering them because she knows it's her first tournament back for 15 months. And that must be a quite a difficult balance to strike. But I thought she did that really well in the match today when her level did drop a little bit in that second set. And when it did get tight, she just competed harder. And I mean, that is her natural instinct, isn't it? And I think that will bode well for her while she grapples with this expectation that she's got of herself at the moment.
Iga Swiatek won. She beat Arantxa Rus 6-1, 6-3. She now plays Camilla Giorgi. Halep won 6-2, 6-1. She only needed an hour to beat the Australian Lizette Cabrera. Incredible moment, incidentally, for Cabrera playing on the Rod Laver Arena. They opened the night session and Cabrera, a young player, her father died in September of last year. Terribly sad story. He was very involved with her career. It was a dream of his to see her play on the Rod Laver Arena. She had returned from playing some ITF events internationally and was in quarantine while he was ill, and she was granted a special exemption to visit her dad in his last days of life during that quarantine period. I know lots of reporting that Tennis Australia were very instrumental in getting that exemption for her for a couple of hours a day. So an extraordinary and heart-wrenching story. But on the Halep front, I mean, let's table all all thoughts of Halep being injured because she wasn't. She was moving like a dream. And it makes me wonder if that loss she suffered last week was a strategic performance, perhaps, given how many withdrawals we ended up seeing from those top players at the tournament last week. Look, I don't know.
I do think that she was in the frame of mind that when she got the back twinge of whatever it was, she made a pretty swift decision, or she subconsciously thought, I won't be pushing every sinew here trying to win this
that's,
match.
That's what I mean, really. Yeah. And for these top players, those competitive juices, that extra 0.2% of it really mattering is, you know, it's fine margins, isn't it? Few other bits and bobs. Katie Bolter lost pretty handily, actually, to Daria Kazatkina. Look, I know Kazatkina is very good. She's been close to the top 10 before, but I think Katie Bolter will be gutted with that, given how well she was playing.
She was quite critical of herself, but in a sort of disappointed way, just said she never felt balanced and comfortable on the court, you know? I think to some degree, Kazatkina can do that to you when she plays well because she's different. And Bolter was saying that. But I also think it's the pressure of the moment. It means so much. And then you build up and build up. And then suddenly you get out there and you just don't feel right. And it must be horrible.
Mm. Yeah, Bolter was saying she put way too much pressure on herself because it was a Grand Slam compared to how she was feeling last week. She was so relaxed. She was playing great. Got her own expectations up, and I mean, by her own admission, it was a bad performance today. And incidentally, she's hanging around in Australia because there's another WTA event next week and she's entered that, but she doesn't know whether she's going to get in it yet, because I think it depends how many people sort of higher rank than her lose in the Australian Open. So she's hanging on in Australia for a bit longer, which must also be a little bit sort of tough to, in terms of how do you get over a loss when you don't really know what you're doing next.
And it might end up incurring, travelling back to the UK. There is hotel quarantine coming in for most countries in the Middle East on the 14th, I think, of February. So that'll mean if you travel back from Australia via the Middle East, you'll end up in a 10-day hotel quarantine in the UK. So there are all sorts of implications like that. Rebecca Marino, the Canadian player, she won her first Grand Slam main draw match today in nearly 10 years. She beat Kirsty Birrell, the Australian. Rebecca Marino, of course, is the player that retired in 2012 after the diagnosis of clinical depression. And she made a comeback a couple of years ago, but she's really had to work her way up. And this is such a benchmark for her, first Grand Slam main draw match. So another really uplifting story. And my final point on the results front is a bone to pick with Matt.
Oh, yeah.
Have you sold me a dud in Marta Kostyuk, Matt? Because I popped her in my quarterfinal lineup off the back of your recommendation, and out she goes from the tournament on day one, the same way as Victoria Kuzmova, who also lost 6-love, 6-4.
Good work, Matt.
That one was to Sabalenka. So
it's all part of the master plan.
Right, okay, as Oasis might say.
I don't think you need to worry about Kostyuk. She was also in hard quarantine.
I'm worrying about myself, Matt.
Oh,
I don't need her to do well in 2 years. I needed her to do well this fortnight.
That is on you.
To be fair, you are very careful these days not to put a time frame on your predictions of that nature.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I couldn't even tweet "don't at me" when I saw Kuzmova losing 6-love, 2-love before people had already done it. Goodness sake.
At least she wasn't the first one to lose.
Well, only because she was scheduled almost last.
Right. So that double is specialist. Day one dealt with. Yes, she won a doubles tournament last week and we didn't even cover it, Matt.
Runner-up.
It was a real, oh.
Yeah, she sort of posted as though she had won it.
But she posed, I saw the photo and it really looked like a sort of trophy lift photo.
It was the plate.
That's really misleading. Okay, you've got to clutch to whatever straws you've got, I suppose. That is day one. Over with. I'm pumped for day two. I'm David Law-esque pumped.
Yeah. Go on, Catherine.
Day two features defending champion Sophia Kenin. She opens on Rod Laver Arena against an Australian called Inglis. Anyone know her first name? No.
Madison?
Oh, yep. Okay. Great. We'll take it, Matt. We'll take it. Maria Brzkova against Alina Svitolina up next, and then Laszlo Gera up against Rafael Nadal, which normally you'd think are notable, but I am going to try and wake up to watch some of that and see how Nadal looks. Some people speculating that he might not even take to the court, so we will watch that one closely. Ash Barty opens the night session against Danka Kovanec, and then it's Stefanos Tsitsipas having his work cut out against Gilles Simon, which I think could be fun. On the Yvonne Goolagong Arena, Garbiñe Muguruza up against Margarita Gasparian, Victoria Azarenka against Jessica Pegula, Vasek Pospisil, Andrei Medvedev, and the night session.
Daniel Medvedev.
Who did I say?
Andre.
Oh my God. I've picked him to win as well. Daniil Medvedev. And the night session is Anderson against Berrettini, and then Sara Cerebes Tormo against Daria Gavrilova. What else have we got? Goff against Teichmann is on the John Cain Arena, and the Brits. Close your ears now if you're one of the people on Twitter that's accusing us of being too Brit-centric. But Fran Jones is last on court 5 against Shelby Rogers. Dan Evans and Cam Norrie are last on court 8. Joe Konta against Kaya Juvan is last on court 13. So basically, sort of at about 7 a.m. on Tuesday morning, almost all the Brits are going to be playing. That's going to be chaotic. And it's going to sound really cool on 5 Live, jumping around, trying to cover all of that. And Heather Watson is second on court 10 against the other Pliskova. So that's tomorrow. Just a few thank you shout outs from today. Rogue Zeus Scousel Mousel, thanks for being our personal mascots. I think Rogue will take the win for today for David getting that Shapovalov prediction correct. Bow down to you, David and Rogue.
Yeah. Scousel inspired me.
Scousel Mousel helped me get Pera over Kerber. In the newsletter.
Did you predicted that?
Yeah.
Crikey. Okay. Well, let's move on from predictions. not so many thanks to Zeus today, but brighter days are ahead, Zeus. Chris Albert Lee is our executive producer. Crumble is our Australian Open mascot. Let's get ready for Crumble. And our shout outs for today, Matt, are?
They are Susan Ramsey.
Thanks, Susan.
Hello, Susan. Thank you. Like Aaron Ramsey, the footballer. Chris Ramsey, the comedian.
Yeah, Gordon Ramsay.
Alf Ramsey. Gordon Ramsay.
Ramsey Street from Neighbours.
An Australian reference. Link. Well done, David. Should have gone there first. Definitely should have gone there before Alf Ramsey.
That was the 80s.
Yeah. Oh, this Neighbours is still going.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, why? Yeah.
I had no idea. Carry on.
Alison Clooney, but not Clooney as in George Clooney.
How do you know?
Because it's a different spelling.
Oh. Well, Alison.
Sounds good, though.
We think you're great.
Yeah. Mm.
Way better than George Clooney. Carry on.
And finally, Owen Davis, who is our second backer this year, just pipped to number one by the legend that is Julie. But,
wow.
But Owen was very fast.
He could
good
be,
work, Owen.
He could be a Plaid Cymru MP. Is it a Davies or a Davis?
It's a Davies, but he told me it's pronounced Davis.
Pronounced Davis, okay.
Oh.
Great.
Well, cheers, Owen.
That is day one of the Australian Open, our first daily podcast. We're back with 13 more. I'm pumped for them. It's going to be great. Tennis is back. There's crowds. It's all very cool. We'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.